We're talking English Premier League football now in particular, and the Manchester Derby has completed its 187th meeting of the two rivals, City and United, with striker Erling Haaland continuing to find the back of the net for his third hat-trick of the season en route to a 6-3 Man City win. It's a busy weekend in the NPL, so there's always plenty to discuss. And joining us now in that respect is our very own pundit and obviously one of our very close brothers on the station, Ricardo Ball. And Ricardo, a noted Manchester United supporter. I've got to say, 6-3, that's conceding a lot of goals, my friend.
Yeah, you're not wrong, Smitty. You're not wrong. I mean, you know, you mentioned it. It's Haaland's. Was it his third hat-trick? He's broken Michael Owen's record for the fastest of three hat-tricks in Premier League history. He's got, 14 goals in 8 games, which is, is astounding, really, when you think about it. He's got 17 goals in 11 games across all competitions. He's just absolutely bossing the Premier League at the moment. It's hard to see how to stop him. I said to you, last week when we had Mark Rosanowski on, who's a City fan, that, you know, the one thing, from a United point of view, you hope for was that when Ten Hag was in charge of Ajax last season, they played Haaland's Dortmund and managed to keep him scoreless over the two games. And you know, thought maybe that there was a way that Ten Hag had with Martinez to shackle him. But I think the problem is, and when you've got Foden and you've got Grealish and you've got De Bruyne, those are pieces that maybe Dortmund didn't have, and they've just got so many ways of hurting you, Manchester City, and it's just impossible to plug all the gaps today at the Etihad.
So tell us about this fellow, this Erling Haaland, please, because hat-tricks now against Man U, Crystal Palace and Notts Forest to his name, the first to do so in 3 successive home matches. You mentioned, I think, in between seasons that he was a good signing. Did you expect it would be having this sort of impact initially?
No, I didn't. And he's a very, very good player. I think he will go on to be, you know, talked about in the same breath as the Ronaldos of this world type thing. You know, as his career goes on, he will achieve a lot in his career. But I thought, because of the way Manchester City have played for so long under Pep Guardiola, they haven't really, since Sergio Aguero had an out-and-out 9, and even with Sergio Aguero there, Pep didn't play him all the time. He liked to play with false 9s, and they liked to play a different way. So I thought it might take some time for them to integrate him. I mean, as an example of what I mean, Jack Grealish, who has started this season really, really well, he was their big signing last season, and he didn't play very much. And I think they found it hard to integrate him into the system. And I thought there might be an element of that at City this season with Haaland, where they'd have to change the style of play to an extent to be able to bring him in and get the best out of him. But I think there have been some teething issues. I think there have been games where they could have scored more, which is probably frightening enough. I think they're clicking now. De Bruyne and Haaland seem to almost have some sort of telepathic understanding. They're going really well. And then you consider Phil Foden as well, who nobody's really talking about, who scored a hat-trick today as well, the young English kid out of Stockport who's come through their ranks. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at it, this is a Manchester United side that have beaten Liverpool and Arsenal in the last month. So for them to concede 6 to Manchester City sort of shows how far ahead I think City are of the rest of the league, even if they aren't quite top of the league just at the moment.
Erik ten Hag's relationship with Cristiano Ronaldo is something we seem to talk about every time we have a chat. Obviously, it's not going too flash.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think there's any secret that Cristiano Ronaldo wanted out. He wanted to go play Champions League football because he has his eye on his legacy and his record of Champions League goals, and he's aware that his old mate Lionel Messi is still running around in that competition and doesn't want to concede, being the all-time leader of goal scoring in the Champions League. And so, yeah, he's been wanting to get out. I think it just says a lot about where he is in his career. At 37, that United couldn't find a Champions League club to take him. There was, you know, he was offered to all the Italian clubs. Apparently Napoli showed some interest, but they wanted some deal that would see United end up still paying most of his wages, so United didn't go for that. Bayern Munich didn't want him. Paris Saint-Germain didn't want him. You know, I think Chelsea may have wanted him, the owner wanted him, but the coach Tuchel didn't, so that didn't happen either. So, yeah, he's in limbo at the moment, and he's not first choice. And, you know, we saw Anthony Martial, who had a really good preseason but then got injured. He's just come back to fitness. He was on the bench with Cristiano Ronaldo, and they opted for him over Cristiano Ronaldo to come off the bench. Ted Hag has said afterwards that was out of respect to Ronaldo. He didn't want to put him on in a game where the team were down, as far down as they were. But I think there's something else going on there. I wouldn't be surprised if after the World Cup, Cristiano Ronaldo ends up in Saudi Arabia, where he's had a few big offers.
Arsenal continue to be at the top of the table. They had 65% of the possession against Spurs. And Julie converted that into a 3-1 win, with the Spurs losing a player down to 10. But having said that, what has been the difference for Arsenal in the start to this season compared to last year?
Well, I think Gabriel Jesus has been a massive part of that. You know, he was a bit of a could start, could not start week in, week out at City. He really is the number 9 down the middle, but at City he was playing as a wide forward. And you know, I think Arsenal, you know, they had Lacazette, who didn't maybe do the work off the ball that's needed, and they didn't really have an out-and-out 9 last season. I think he has been a massive difference, Gabriel Jesus, to City. And so I think that was a really good piece of business. I also think Saliba at the back, who Arsenal bought 3 seasons ago and then just loaned him back to clubs in the French League for 3 seasons in a row because they didn't think he was ready. Well, they've brought him in and he's hit the ground running now. So I think they've shored up at the back as well. They're looking very good. And, you know, another player that maybe doesn't get talked about as much in the deal between Arsenal and City was that they also bought Zinchenko, the Ukrainian, who's often played left back for Manchester City. He, in the Ukrainian national team, plays in the midfield generally. He can play as a 10, he can play as an 8, or he can play as a left back or a wing back. So lots of opportunities there for him, and he's a really good ball player. He's almost another playmaker. And I think you know, those additions that Arsenal have made have really, really helped them. And, you know, it's ironic now that they've bought these two players from City who were, I guess you would say, squad players at City, and they've improved Arsenal that much that we see Arsenal top of the league.
One of the other high-scoring games of the weekend was a 3-3 draw between Liverpool and Brighton, which sees Brighton still in there on 14 points and fourth on the ladder at the moment. What is the reason for their resurgence or the great start to the season in your mind?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of it's down to the great work that Graham Potter has done over the last few seasons, even though he's now at Chelsea. He set them up really well. He's built a really good squad there, and they've finally found a way to start scoring goals. I mean, Leandro Trossard, who scored the hat-trick, he's a Belgian international, but, you know, he's not a guy that gets talked about in the same breath as a De Bruyne or whatever, but he's, you know, a very, very good player. He's a playmaker. He can play on the wing. He can play as a 10. And, you know, he scored a hat-trick against Liverpool. I mean, I'm not sure when the last away player to score a hat-trick at Anfield was, but it'll be a few years between drinks, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, I think they're really solid. They're tough to break down. And I know they conceded 3 goals in this game, but really they should have won it. They let Liverpool back in. They were 2-0 up, and they had to score late to get an equaliser. But Liverpool seem really off the pace at the moment. I'm not sure what's going on there. There's something going on behind the scenes at Liverpool that suggests that maybe all is not right there, and Klopp's got a bit of work to do. Smithy, when he was at Dortmund and before that, when he was at Mainz, there's something they called the 7-year itch with Klopp, where he hits to 7 years with a team and then everything starts to fall apart. And I don't know if that's to do with, you know, the message becomes too samey and players switch off or what it is. But this is his 7th year at Liverpool, and things aren't going as Liverpool fans are used to under Klopp. And yeah, I think there's a few problems behind the scenes. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes between now and that break for the World Cup.
That's an interesting point you make because, you know, a decade or so ago, even a little bit longer than that, I think it's fair to say, Ricardo, that, you know, it was a time when there was longevity in the management, particularly in the Premier League. If you look at Ferguson, if you look at Wenger, if you look at other candidates as well. But it's getting rarer, isn't it, with the amount of coaching talent and the way that they just seems to be a revolving door around Europe.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, just this morning, the Wolves manager, Bruno Lage, they lost 2-0 yesterday to West Ham. He's been let go. So Wolves are there. I mean, I'm trying to remember how many that is. I think that's four or five managers already this season, and we're eight rounds in that have been let go by their clubs. It's instant gratification, I guess you would say. I mean, you know, you consider that when Ferguson, you mentioned there, came in 1986 at United, he didn't win a trophy till 1990, and they didn't win the league until 92. But that was, you know, they took their time, they had patience with them, they built, rebuilt the youth teams set up at United, and they rebuilt the first team, and it took them a while to get it right, but they did in the end. But once again, it's not something they'd have had in the modern day, because he wouldn't have lasted.
Right, interesting at the bottom. There's a game tomorrow between Leicester and Nottingham Forest, and they are the two lowest teams in the league. And it just looks as if for them, the writing is on the wall this far out.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, Forest, I think, I don't think either of these teams will be relegated, to be honest. Ooh, I think there are worse teams in the league than them. But I think, you know, Leicester City, they're running into problems. They've got a bloated squad. They were trying to move players on that they couldn't move. They were trying to hold on to players that people did want. We saw Fofana in the end go to Chelsea for $70 million. And that meant they haven't been able to freshen up the squad. I don't think Brendan Rodgers is overly happy there. So that may be a change we see in the near future, maybe in the next couple of weeks. They may change their manager there. But I think they've still got enough in that squad. You know, when you consider they've got Vardy, they've got James Maddison, they've got Yuri Tulemans, they've got, you know, Castagna at right back. They've got guys that won the Premier League only a few seasons ago there. So they've got enough experience and goals in them. I think that they will get it right. They just need a little bit of time. And for Nottingham Forest, they came up, they're now owned by the same guy that owns Olympiacos, but when they came up, 19 players left the club, either because contracts were up or they were on loan from Premier League teams. So they had to rebuild. They signed 21 players in the off-season. So then you can imagine how long it takes to get them to gel and to all be singing off the same song sheet. They've brought in some very good players. They've still got the core of the squad that got promoted, of the starting 11 anyway, that played in the final, in the playoff final. So I think Nottingham Forest will come right. So long as they stick with Steve Cooper and give them the time, I think Forest, they've bought well and they've bought smart. I think they will come right. He just needs a bit more time to get everybody gelling in that team.
What an amazing story for Anna Leet. Of course, our goalkeeper for our football Ferns. She's been fantastic. She debuted for Aston Villa over the weekend, saved four penalties in a shootout win over Manchester United. Incredible.
Yeah, superb. I mean, she was at West Ham last season and couldn't get a game, basically. So left and has taken the opportunity to go to Aston Villa, and she's getting an opportunity there. So, I think Anna Leet is a player that we'll see more of. I think she's a player that, really is now going to be vying with Vic Essien and Erin Naylor to be the number one for the Football Ferns with World Cup just around the corner. And, you know, she's playing at the highest level of any of those three. Vic Essien's at Glasgow Rangers, playing in their women's team, and Erin Naylor's playing in Sweden. But I think she's playing at the highest level. And, you know, Villa at the moment, you know, that was a cup game that they won on penalties. But they've started the Women's Super League really well as well. But they're 2-2 in that game. They're currently sitting third behind Arsenal and Manchester United in that league. So, yeah, it's a fantastic story. And, you know, just more... another indication of how much talent we do have in New Zealand football and the amount that we have now playing professionally overseas.
And just finally, what isn't a fantastic story is the tragedy in Malang in Indonesia with 120 plus people dying after police firing tear gas in an attempt to stop violence triggered a stampede of fans scrambling to get out. That is a horrific story.
Yeah, it takes you back to the 80s, doesn't it, Smithy?
Yeah, it does.
You know, and we had those problems in Europe and in the UK, but I think it's now the deadliest sports event in history, they're calling it. And originally the reports were saying that, you know, it was 174. I think that death toll may go up. So, yeah, I mean, there'll be, I'm sure that FIFA will be looking pretty hard at that. I mean, it's the last thing that they want coming into a World Cup. You know, we're only, what, 6 weeks away from everything stopping for a World Cup. And the world is talking about, you know, the way that the game has been placed in Indonesia. And, you know, I think there'll be that'll be looked at pretty hard by not just FIFA, but probably the Indonesian government as well. And probably some heads will roll out of that police force, you'd have to think.
You'd have to think so, yep. Ricardo, always great to catch up. I hope you recover well and very soon, mate. There's always another game.
Well, we won the second half 3-2, Smithy. We won the second half 3-2. Can I hold on to that?
Okay. Yeah, hold on to that. Hold on to that, my friend. Great to chat, mate, as always, and thanks for your update. Cheers.
No worries, mate. Go well.